Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
If you keep this knowledge and you live your knowledge in a responsible manner, in a prudent manner, in a peaceful manner, at some point this knowledge is going to become wisdom and you are going to become a wise person. So this is the journey of knowledge. It's not enough to be knowledgeable. You need to activate this knowledge so it becomes wisdom, because we need that in this world full of crisis.
That was the voice of Elder Marcelo Saavedra, professor in the Aboriginal Studies program at Ottawa University. We spoke with him about love and the teachings of the grandfathers. In many ways, I think that the idea of moving forward inspires a sense of regeneration, a sense of regeneration in the ways we walk with one another, in the ways we learn to see each other. We finally find a way to develop new organs, new cultural organs that allow us to see beyond this fog of racism, sexism, and class economic discrimination that enables so much of the inequality and injustice in the world to be perceived as the normal, the way things are. Our steps need to be inspired to transform that inequality, to see that not only are we capable of imagining a different society, there are many people already making that society a possibility. That is the journey that the Venezuelan people had led, that the Bolivians have invited us to walk with them. In many ways, it's an invitation, but it's also a responsibility. Someone who has always inspired me to see the world through eyes of responsibility is my next guest. Dr. Marcelo Saavedra is a professor at the University of Ottawa. He teaches in the program of Aboriginal Studies. He's also an Aymara elder and someone I'm very privileged to have with us this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, Sylvia. Good morning. It's so good to hear your voice.
Now, I think part of the problem we face when looking at the world today is a sense of disconnection, a disconnect not just from one another. We engage in, you know, our iPhones and our computers, and we call that being connected with people. But in many ways, it's a false sense of connection because we lose that sense of, you know, being in the presence of another, the sacredness of life that being with one another in communion brings. So can we talk a little bit about, you know, what our elders are saying when they say, let's return to the sacred? What does that mean? What does a return to the sacred mean for a world that is wounded in the way that ours is? And what are the possibilities that this opens for us?
Yes, Sylvia, our world is wounded, but it's our spirits are very wounded as well. We live in an era of separation. We've become separated from our true natures, and that's the source of all the crisis we are suffering nowadays. And the sense of this connection that we have, it also emanates from this sense of entitlement that the modern world has forced us to believe. But, you know, if we are going to talk about sacredness, I think it is important to go back some years before and remember the time when everything was sacred. You know, I am talking about the Inca Confederacy, and I'm going to cite what one of the last Incas remembered and also instructed to his people before going to battle with the Spaniards. And he said something like, remember that our ancestors have been good to the people. Don't ever forget that. Don't let your children forget it. I know one day in the future, a time will come when they will force us to worship their God. And when that day comes, do what you have to in front of them. But in private, don't forget our ceremonies and our gods. Don't ever forget the sacredness of our time. And if they force you to destroy our shrines, only reveal what you have to, and keep the rest hidden in your hearts. Keep your heart sacred. So this message was delivered in the year 1572, more or less. And since then, there's been a holocaust of our peoples. Our population has declined like from 92 to 96%. You know, millions of Indians have perished in these 5 centuries of colonial rule. And along with those people, and along with those visions of sacredness, we have also become separated from who we truly are. So I think it is important that we acknowledge that our ancestors had managed to understand and had managed to envision a situation, an existence that was embedded in the sacredness of everything. And also, like, just to mention another example of how separated we are and how we live in a time of profanity. You know that everywhere people mention to the endowments Mother Earth provides for us as resources. But the resources is a name that is non-existent in indigenous languages. Rather, we call them either blessings, endowments, or gifts, because that's what they are. A child born in the Amazon, you know, and observing like a mountain, for instance, you know, for this child, the mountain is a sacred place. It's a place where the ancestors live, the spirits of the ancestors live. It's an expression of Mother Earth, of Pachamama. In that sense, it's totally sacred. So this child is going to think very deeply before going to use some of the gifts that are going to be found there. Whereas a modern child that is brought up in this civilization, for that child, that mountain, that very same mountain, is just a pile of ore ready to be exploited for the usage of one species on the planet, our species. So that's the sense of entitlement we have, which is very curious, actually, if you put it in perspective and if you see other cultures, either now or in the past. You know that we have this very weird belief that we are entitled to everything that is on the land, and we just go and take it, you know. We don't even ask for permission or anything like that. And I think that's the source of all this disconnection that we have, and all the other disconnections that we can see, like, for instance, people interacting with their computers, with their iPods or Androids or whatever. They have the belief that they are connected, you know, they're called social networks, but in fact they're just talking with a machine, you know. They're not talking to real people, you know. And and so this disconnection is so profound, so deep, that we fail to see it in everyday life.
I was listening to a program yesterday, and David Suzuki, a fabulous scientist, was talking about being in nature at least 30 minutes a day and the significance that that brings. And this woman called and said, you know, I have a child who's 4 years old, and he watched this video game where the shark chases the people off to the shore, and he's terrified to go in the water. And I was thinking about when you said, remember that our ancestors were good to the people, keep your heart sacred. Mm-hmm. I think about the way we have been forced to forget through violence, through the continuous repression that we have endured, to forget, you know, the inherent sacredness of life that once we share intimately with other species and didn't consider ourselves superior. So I wonder if we could talk about that forgetfulness that has been imposed, the way memory of ourselves and memory of the sacredness of the world, the living world that includes both human and non-human living beings. And how do we restore, how do we find a way to break through this fog of race, class, gender, culture, all the different ways that have been used to cultivate this cultural domination that, as you point out, seems entitled to violate. And that's how our identities almost form, you know, by our ability to violate others, our ability to take from others by force or by crook or whatever, whatever we desire, without being responsible for our actions.
Yeah, it is my belief that the source of all this disconnection, all of this era of separation, all of this forgetfulness, and all of this profanity comes when we as modern human beings, we started to hold this strange belief that things come in units, like individuals, and we forget that actually if you observe the universe, if you observe the Mother Earth, the environment, what we call the environment, there's never something that stays on its own. There's always a supporting being or supporting system, providing for the existence of another being or of another system. And, as I told you, you can observe this either just in your surroundings, or also if you take a telescope and you look into deep space, you're going to see the same phenomenon. And this is because in the modern era, with the scientific revolution and with the advent of the scientific method, we started to believe that things were made up of individual, discrete objects, what they call the building blocks of matter, And they are trying, in physics, for instance, they are trying to find the fundamental microparticles that are at the base of all matter in this universe. Not long ago, like about 6 months ago, if I recall well, they managed to find one of the basic components of the atom, which it's called the boson Higgs, and this subatomic particle is believed to be the one that carries mass into the atom. So again, you see there the workings of the Western mind. They say, oh, we found what really, provides for the existence of matter, and we found it, because they think it is an it, meaning that it's an individual component. But I am sure that when they keep on using their, neutron colliders, they're going to smash this boson Higgs, and they are going to see that this boson Higgs is also composed of other components, smaller yet, because everything in this universe is composed of parity relation. If there's a real source of existence in this universe, it is not actually matter. It is actually a relation. We as people, we are just a set of relations. We believe ourselves to be so solid, so material, and stuff like that, but that's an illusion, because if you just take a cell out of your body and you observe it through a microscope, if you go to the atomic level, you are going to see that this cell is composed of molecules, and these molecules are composed of atoms. And if you look at an atom, you're going to see that 99.9999% of that atom is void. And it's just a dance of subatomic particles, very much like our solar system, So if you make a conclusion out of this observation, you have to conclude that you being composed of atoms, and an atom being 99.99999% void, therefore you are a void. You are not really matter, you are just a void. So the sensation that you have that you are solid and you are so much entrenched in this material world, it's just an illusion. Because really what you are is a relation. Since the moment you are born into this world, the very moment your spirit comes into this planet and takes the form of flesh and bone into yourself, you are developing a parity relationship with creation. you are an emanation of creation, and that's a parity relation. And from that moment on, and for the rest of your life, you are going to be entertaining parity relations over and over again. And that's what we fail to see. And I think that's the source of our forgetfulness. We have forgotten there's relatedness in our existences. And one of the most important, and I would say the one of the most sacred relations that we have, is the one with our true mother, Mother Earth, because we come out of her. We don't come on her. We come out of her in the form of the four sacred elements. And if you acknowledge that, then you need to respect that. You need to respect the sacredness of your being, because your being implies the existence of this other being, which is your mother. And then how can you exploit her or rape her or destroy her as we are doing? It's because we have forgotten. So the trick, I think, lies on the fact that we have to remember where we come from. We don't need like rocket sciences to do that. We just need a bit of humility, and we also need another portion of fearlessness.
I'm so glad you point out the need for us to recognize that humility is central to us finding our path in a culture of domination that is imposed by coercive force, whether it's military, economic, or social and cultural. We impose this idea of the individual as the central tenet of that culture, you know, I mean, this idea that individuals make the world, but as you point out, we are relations. The way we relate to others, the way we receive and respect others, reciprocates and, you know, reverberates and recreates the very, ecosystems for our own existence. Can we talk a little bit then about the need to reject this delusion of superiority that we have harbored over nature, and also over other people, because we not only othered nature by calling it resources, we also othered people by saying, that whites are better than, you know, brown mm-hmm. people. And we have all kinds of hierarchical structures that don't always articulate, but we see it in practice. We see it in the way power, whether economic, political, you know, are redistributed and create relationships of inequality.
Well, in terms of humility, for instance, that aspect of our existences is so easy to see. You know, you don't need elaborate models or a very, you know, powerful intelligence to see that. It's very simple. We are just one species among millions of other species. The very minute species that populate this planet, like, for instance, bacteria. I'm just going to talk about bacteria. And you can find bacteria, like, everywhere on this planet, even in your internal ecosystem. If you just look inside of your body, you are going to find hosts of bacterial life thriving in your body, inside your body, and also around your body, everywhere. If these bacteria were to disappear from the planet, like tomorrow, for instance, you know, in the days that follow this extinction of these bacteria, the planet would just collapse very rapidly, because they are at the base of life on this planet. If we, as a human species, would disappear from this planet, you know, the days that follow our extinction would the other species would witness, you know, a planet that starts to thrive in terms of the amount of other beings populating the planet. So, you know, just by acknowledging that, it's so easy to see that we need to be humble. We need to be humbled by the fact that we are just a speck on the big circle of life. And I think I heard this from David Suzuki as well. If there would have been like an alien species coming to visit the planet like about a million years ago, and if they would have wanted to, you know, get in touch with the most intelligent species at the time. Well, here also, I guess we need to like define what intelligence means. But we'll just take what David shared with us. You know, they of course they wouldn't pick us as the most intelligent species on the planet. They would probably choose the dolphins or the whales or some other animals inhabiting the planet, and we would be like a very end of that list, you know. Because, and actually, if you just see what we've done with our intelligence, and we see the outcome of this human, or rather modern intelligence, you know, we can see that we haven't been that intelligent as we think. We have been very stupid, because we have been destroying, you know, the support system, the only support system that we have, which is our planet. Usually I call this era the era of the stupidity, because that's what we become.
If intelligence, then, is our ability to coexist, if intelligence is our ability to relate in order to create sustainable networks and ecosystems for survival, are there teachings that can help us engage in this journey of renewal and regeneration?
There's many forms of intelligence. You know, usually when we talk about intelligence, we're just talking about rational intelligence, and that rational intelligence has been tainted by industrial civilization. But, you know, there are other kinds of intelligence, like, for instance, emotional intelligence, there's artistic intelligence, kinesthetic intelligence, and many other forms. So if we're going to be smart using our intelligence, we have to be holistically intelligent, not only rational intelligence, because rational intelligence is actually bringing our species to its own demise. And yeah, actually, you know, there's a set of teachings, and we call them the teachings of the seven grandfathers, and they are very specific, and these teachings have been passed down from generation to generations for thousands of years. And the summit of these teachings came when the Six Nations, they decided to form a confederacy here on Turtle Island. And the teachings, and I'm going to just mention them at first, so you will know what I'll be talking about. So, you know, and also relating to your mentioning of intelligence. The first intelligence, and this is not hierarchical, you know, they are like more in a circle, so there's not an order of these teachings. So the first teaching is wisdom. And wisdom here we have to differentiate it from both knowledge and information. You know, information is like a first moment in which you are just acquiring data, if you put it in that way, information through your senses, either your body senses, or sometimes you can also collect information through your subconscious and also through your spirit, you know. But then if you apply proper reflection to this information, then you can convert that into knowledge. And this knowledge can take many forms. It's like practical knowledge to do something very mechanical, for instance, or it's like more like a what they call soft knowledge. That is something that, you know, allows you to do more complex things, like, for instance, to create a state, you know, or also you can have knowledge about the inner workings of your body, or you can have knowledge about your spiritual journey, you know. So this knowledge takes many forms, and it also goes deep into your existence and also very wide from your existence as well. If you keep this knowledge and you live your knowledge in a responsible manner, in a prudent manner, in a peaceful manner, at some point this knowledge is going to become wisdom, and you are going to become a wise person. So this is the journey of knowledge. It's not enough to be knowledgeable. You need to activate this knowledge so it becomes wisdom, because we need that in this world full of crisis. We need wise people, wise communities, taking proper and prudent decisions, because we have to provide for our future generations. Otherwise, we won't have anything to offer to them. So that's that's the first teaching of the Haudenosaunee Nation, the confederacy of in the eastern part of Canada, and they call that Nebakawin in their language. The second teaching that they have to offer, the second grandfather, is love. Love is a is something that permeates every other teaching, you know. And actually, you can derive all seven teachings from any one of them. So they imply each other. So in today, you know, the second teaching I'm going to share is love, and love implies also a state of being paired up. It implies the notion of parity, or rather the fact of parity. And also, when you form a parity, and if you have love, then you also imply that there is peace amongst the components of the pair. So very important in the notion of love is the notion of peace. There is not love if there is not peace. And when this happens, love must be unconditional. You don't put conditions to your love. You know, the words that I'm using in the Anishinaabe language for these teachings, there's like six of the teachings, they contain the syllable of love in the language, because all these other teachings are related to love, you know. And I can say it, you know, the word in the Algonquian language is Sage Dewin, and that De means love. And you're going to hear in the other teachings that this syllable is in all of them, because, you know, love is an engine that has to articulate every other teaching as well. And the other characteristic of love is that it needs to be reciprocal. And this love is expressed in the form of particular pairs coming together, like the couple, but also, you know, expanding through the family, through the community, through the nation, and through the species. You know, through this love has to be expressed at all instances.
Tune in next week to hear the continuation of our interview with Elder Marcelo Saavedra on the teachings of our elders.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.